I invite you now to join me in the spirit of meditation. Some seem to be born with a nearly completed puzzle, and so it goes. Souls going this way and that, trying to assemble the myriad parts. But know this, no one has within themselves all the pieces of the puzzle. Like before the days when they used to seal jigsaw puzzles in cellophane, ensuring that all the pieces are there. Everyone carries at least one and probably many of someone else's puzzle pieces. Sometimes they know it, sometimes they don't. And when you present your piece, which is worthless to you, to another, whether you know it or not, whether they know it or not, you are a blessing. Your peace is a blessing in their lives. You are a messenger from the Most High. Our first reading this morning is from The Little Prince. How many of you have read The Little Prince at one time or another in your life? It is probably one of the most translated books ever written into over 300 languages and has probably is among the top 10 of books selling the most copies in the world. But if you haven't read The Little Prince, it's a story about the journey of a little prince who is learning about life by journeying from between a series of planets. He's learning about people and roses and relationships as he travels from one planet to another. And he winds up in the Sahara Desert sharing the stories of his travels with a stranded pilot who's the author. And on one of the planets, the little prince meets a fox. And he says, "Come and play with me," proposed the little prince. "I am so unhappy." "I cannot play with you," the fox said. "I am not tamed." "Ah, please excuse me," said the little prince. But after some thought, he added, "What does it mean, tame?" "You do not live here," said the fox. "What is it that you're looking for?"
"I'm looking for friends. What does it mean, tame?"
"It is an act too often neglected," said the fox. "It means to establish ties."
"To establish ties?"
"Just that," said the fox. "To me, you are still nothing more than a little boy who is just like 100,000 other little boys. And I have no need of you. And you, on your part, have no need of me. To you, I am nothing more than a fox like 100,000 other foxes. But if you tame me, then we shall need each other. To me, you will be unique in all the world. And to you, I shall be unique in all the world. My life is very monotonous, said the fox. I hunt chickens, men hunt me. All the chickens are just alike, and all the men are just alike, and in consequences, I'm a little bored. But if you tame me, it will be as if the sun came to shine on my life. I shall know the sound of a step that will be different from all of the others. Other steps send me hurrying back underneath the ground. Yours will call me, like music, out of my burrow. And then, look, you see the field, the grain fields down yonder? I don't eat bread. Wheat is of no use to me. The wheat fields have nothing to say to me. And that is sad. But you have hair that is the color of gold. Think how wonderful it will be when you have tamed me. The grain, which is also golden, will bring me back to the thought of you, and I shall love to listen to the wind in the wheat. The fox gazed at the little prince for a long time. Please, please tame me, he said. And so the little prince tamed the fox, and when the hour of his departure drew near, "Ah," said the fox, "I shall cry." "It's your own fault," said the little prince. "I never wished you any sort of harm, but you wanted me to tame you." "Yes, that is so," said the fox. "But now you're going to cry," said the little prince. "Yes, that is so," said the fox. "Then it has done you no good at all." "It has done me good," said the fox, "because of the color of the wheat fields." And then he added, "And now, here is my secret, a very simple secret. It is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye." "What is essential is invisible to the eye," the little prince repeated, so he would be sure to remember. Here ends the reading. And I'd like to invite Brian and Linda to come forward and share some stories about special friends in their lives.
Good morning. Many of you know that my father, George Samuel Higgs, died in February 2016 at the grand old age of 109 years, 1 month, and 26 days. And I largely attribute his longevity to a number of things, but one of which was good, solid, many friendships in his life. He was born in 1907. He grew up in Staffordshire. When he was probably a teenager or thereabouts, he moved to Coventry and learned his trade of tool setting whilst there. And then also learned about ballroom dancing, and that was the social thing in those days. And so he went to ballroom dances, and that's how he met my mother. So I guess I can consider my existence to be a result of ballroom dancing. And then the war came. They got married. The war came, and there was the Blitz, which they lived through. And in 1940-ish, 41 maybe, he was sent to head up the technical side of a shadow factory in rural Leicestershire. So I can owe my the existence of my place of birth to World War II. And so we moved there, and I was born in 1944. And I remember throughout my growing up, one of the strongest memories I have is that my mother and father, every single Saturday, come whatever the weather was, would go to Coventry, and they would go to the Jaguar Cars social club for a dance and meet all their old flames from Coventry. But then Dad retired, and then unfortunately my mother came down with Alzheimer's. And it wasn't long before they couldn't go dancing at all. And my father took care of my mother for 7 long years until her death in 1993. And he came over here and visited for a few months, actually, and trying to figure out what to do with the rest of his life. He wrote a poem for the congregation, which I can share with you if anybody is interested, about how much the congregation helped him with that process. He went home, and far from staying inside and doing nothing, he reached out. He found another local dance group, Forum Dancing, and that was, he was probably about 87 then. And by the time his 100th birthday came along, there were more people at his 100th birthday celebration from his friends he had met since my mother's death than from before. And eventually he had his 100th birthday celebration. Is that the one with all the ladies surrounding him? I hope that gives you a sense. He was popular. Thank you.
To see all of you. Mr. B. I first spoke these words a couple of years ago at the memorial service of a dear friend. And with except a few modifications, this is what I said. In the fall of 1956, Leslie College paired me with Marsha White to be roommates. That was the beginning of what was to be nearly 60-year friendship. 60-year friendship. I don't remember when we started calling each other roomie. Over the years, we shared our experiences teaching young children, the joys and trials of marriage and raising children, and the satisfaction of seeing them grow to fine adults. Grandchildren have been the frosting on the cake. In more recent retirement years, our visits with each other became more frequent. We walked in the woods, both in Massachusetts and in New Hampshire, enjoying the wonders of nature. In my town, Milford, we visited a blue heron rookery, Munson Village, down a long path. The last time was just a year ago. Now, that was 2 years ago that I said that. When the mountain laurel was in glorious bloom, Erna, you were probably there. In Woburn, where she lived, we enjoyed the many birds to be seen at Horn Pond. Rumi and I shared books, recipes, birds, love of nature, each other's friends, much laughter, and some tears. And how we could talk. There never seemed to be enough time to say everything we had on our minds. A favorite thing to do was have ice cream for lunch at the Sunday school on the Cape.
I wonder if it's still there. Or maybe DQ at the Pheasant Lane Mall in New Hampshire, where we met sometimes. And we both loved our hedgehogs. Her Hedgie and my Mr. B, named for Jan Brett, the author, who had lots of hedgehogs in her books. They had their own get-togethers when Rumi and I did. In fact, one of the reasons Mr. B wanted to be sitting here was to see if maybe Pinky was out there. Pinky belongs to Erna. I didn't tell Erna, and so Pinky's not here. Hedgie, her hedgehog, has gone on to live with grandchildren. Some of the entourage are down here. I will close by reading a few short bits from two books that Rumi gave to me, and then a reading from Kate Langdon, given to me by another good friend, Erna. This is from The Nature of Friendship. It takes a long time to hatch an old friend. Is that the picture? The birds? True friends are always together in spirit. Similarities make friendships fun. Differences make them more interesting. Friends by nature. What two friends have in common isn't common. It's their own particular mix of laughter and tears and memories, and it belongs to only them. Life is so much happier when we take time for the simple pleasures, like birds singing, the scent of fresh rain, and the company of friends. And to close, this embodies the spirit of my dear Rumi. Life should not be a journey to the grave with the intention of arriving safely in an attractive and well-preserved body, but rather to slide in sideways, champagne in one hand, strawberries in the other, body thoroughly used up, totally worn out, and screaming, "Woohoo, what a ride!" Was that okay? Okay. Some people thought we were a little strange talking to our hedgehogs. They have different clothing for different seasons. Mr. B, Mrs. B.
Thank you, Brian and Linda, for sharing such special memories about friendship. We can find ourselves in all kinds of situations when we might strike up a friendship. They can be in the most unlikely of places, but oftentimes they happen in the context of community, whether it's in a ballroom dance or at college. But we have a very special community here as well. And I wanted to sort of shift our focus to our community here now and share two readings with you. The first is from the Upada Sutta, from the Buddhist teaching, and it goes like this. One day, while walking quietly together out of the silence, the Buddha's attendant Ananda declared, "Teacher, to have companions and comrades is the great way. Is so amazing. I have come to realize that friendship is fully half of an authentic spiritual life." Friendship is fully half of an authentic spiritual life. They proceeded along quietly for a while more before, out of that silence, the Holy One responded, "No, dear one, without companions and comrades, no one can live into the deep finding the true harmonies of life. to achieve authentic wisdom. To say it simply, friendship is the whole of the spiritual life. Friendship is the whole of the spiritual life. And from Thich Nhat Hanh, one of my favorite, alone we are vulnerable, but with brothers and sisters and siblings to work with, we can support each other. We cannot go to the ocean as a drop of water. We would evaporate before reaching our destination. But if we become a river, if we go as a sangha or as a community of practice, we are sure to arrive at the ocean. Taking refuge in the sangha will allow the sangha to carry us, to transport us, and we will suffer less. Here ends the reading. And I'm watching the time. I really want to open the time of reflection up to you all, and I just invite maybe two or three of you, if you'd like to think about the ways in which this community may have felt you feel less alone, less like a drop of water, and more like part of an ocean going to the sea. How has this community helped to shape you and help you to grow? And so I'm going to grab the mic and invite a couple of, I wish we had more time. Maybe you'll continue the conversation over coffee. That would be awesome, or into the future. Anyone would like to share? Well, you have thoughts.
I haven't had a chance to think about this. But I think one of the friendships for me that's very, very deep and that I never expected would happened because of this church. And she's sitting right over there. See? Linda and I couldn't be more different in many ways, but we've become dear friends. And it's not just music. It's so many other things that touch each other. I don't know what to say about it other than to say that it's just a wonderful companionship that I look forward to every week. It's gotten to the point where we are now working our way around the Milford Oval having lunch at different places. It's that bad. So you may have hedgehogs, but some of us eat our way around friendship.
That's awesome. Cammie, did you want to say?
Steve and I moved here in 1997 in January, and we didn't know anybody. We moved here from California, and so we were in great need of friends, and we started to make friends here, but once my daughter was born, I discovered this thing that you call mom friends. I didn't really have any friends in the congregation. I think it was Jen White that came up to me, and she said, "Our babies are essentially the same age," and she just sort of reached out to be a mom friend, and I remember thinking at the time, our babies are not anywhere close to the same age. What is she thinking? Because they were 3 months apart. But indeed, our daughters did grow up together in this church, and I thought of this church as a place of friendship for me, but what it turned out to be more important was that our children made friends here that they never could make in the schools, you know. So it became super important, especially since they had summer friends where we were in Maine working in the summers. Then all the other school kids here had bonded over the summer and had sleepovers forever, and then it came back and they weren't, you know, they didn't have those summer Milford friendships to bond with the kids here. So their church friends became the really, really super important. And their church friends formed them. more than anything else, I think. They, you know how kids are, they adopted the values of their peer group, you know, and that was super, super important to all of us.
And the one thing that I want to add, then I'll get over to Ruth, is it's often said that you can't be a Unitarian Universalist on your own, that you really need community to be able to explore the free and responsible search for truth and meaning, that we don't have all the puzzle pieces, and that we get our pieces from each other as we go along the journey. And I think what you said, Cammie, especially about the values and formation of our youth is particularly poignant, because I think it has a lot to do with the puzzle pieces they give each other while they're growing up. And we do that for one another if we allow ourselves to be authentic, and we listen to one another in the context of that authenticity, and approach each other with curiosity and wonderment for all that we have to offer. Those are some of the gifts of friendship in a Unitarian Universalist congregation. Ruth.
When I first came to this church, I looked at the card that's in all of our pews, and the part about respecting the dignity and worth of every person just caught me, and I knew I was home. It just feels like a wonderful home. And it's continued to feel as welcoming as that all the way.
Thank you. And I'm sorry we don't have more time for this conversation, but we do. We have more time to talk to each other, which is one of the nice things about being in community. So continue the conversation. It's a fruitful one.